Today on Annenberg Radio News.
We felt like the best way to get into people's mouths is to give it to them for free.
When LA Bakery takes to the streets to distribute its product. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for April 13th, 2010. I'm Megan McCarty. Today, Los Angeles mourns the death of the first active LAPD officer killed in action in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Robert James Cottle, an LAPD SWAT officer for 20 years and a Marine for 28, was honored today in downtown Los Angeles. Annenberg Radio News' Asim Barwani was at the ceremony.
Sorrow and memories of a loved one filled the air of downtown LA this morning. Robert James Cottle, or simply RJ, was an officer, father, husband, and Marine. Horses led the procession of officers and Marines, pulling the closed casket draped in a large U.S. flag. Police shut down parts of First Street, Broadway, and Temple. It started at 8:45 in the morning at the Police Administration Building and reached the Cathedral of Our Lady of the Angels shortly after 9, with helicopters flying overhead. Family, including his wife and 9-month-old daughter, along with friends and other of Cottle's loved ones, gathered inside to send him their goodbyes.
Thanks for the ride, RJ. And Godspeed, good and faithful friend. Semper Fidelis, my brother. Godspeed. Sergeant Major, out.
We will all miss you, but our memories of you will live on forever. Rest in eternal peace, my dear brother. Your tour of duty has now been completed. Vaya con Dios, hermanito. Until we meet again.
Just as the ceremony moved outside to the cathedral courtyard, giant clouds masked the bright sun to cast a shadow over the casket and RJ's loved ones. Cottle was killed by a roadside bomb in late March. President Obama awarded Cottle the Purple Heart Medal. He will be laid to rest on Friday at Arlington National Cemetery. Asim Barwani, Annenberg Radio News.
Graduation is quickly approaching for high schools across Los Angeles. Seniors at one South Los Angeles area high school aren't just worrying about picking caps and gowns. They're in the running for President Obama to be their commencement speaker. Stephanie Guzman reports.
President Obama is putting students to work. He wants the U.S. to have the highest proportion of college graduates in the world by 2020. And on the White House website, he pitched another idea to every high school across the nation.
Hey, I'm excited to announce the first annual Race to the Top High School Commencement Challenge. This spring, I'll visit the winning school to speak at commencement.
More than 1,000 schools applied and 6 were chosen, including Environmental Charter High School in Lawndale.
Well, we're excited to be one of the top 6 finalists.
That's Allison Suffit Diaz, the founder and executive director of the school.
Our school is unique in the sense that we are both a college prep school and we have a green curriculum for green jobs in the 21st century.
Students had to make a video to show how their school should be a model for other high schools. The school also included data showing 92% of last year's graduating class was admitted to 4-year colleges.
And that's pretty significant since only 20% of our parents finished college.
Other finalists include high schools from Kansas, Colorado, Michigan, Florida, and Ohio. The 6 schools will now create new videos that will be posted on the White House's website. The public will vote for 3 finalists, and the president will pick the winner.
Good luck.
Stephanie Guzman, Annenberg Radio News.
In its latest move to save money, the Los Angeles Unified School District approved a deal to have 5 furlough days this year and 7 next year. That means school's out a week early for LAUSD kids. Paula Kozofsky has the story.
Since the idea of shortening the school year was floated, and today it's official with the unanimous vote from the school board, it will save LAUSD $140 million. Steve Zimmer is a member of the Board of Education.
One wants to shortchange our students or shorten our school year. This was the best of all negative options in a state that has chosen not to prioritize public education for the last several years.
UTLA, the teachers' union, agreed to the deal over the weekend. 80% of the union's teachers voted for the furloughs. Vice President Greg Stolkovitz says the deal is unfortunate, but the state's fiscal crisis called for it.
We felt that, unfortunately, it was the most fair way to do this, and it also drives home the message to the public that if they don't get involved in pressuring the state legislature, California is going to continue to sink lower and lower.
Stolkovitz says teachers already grappling with a struggling school district will now have to figure out how to teach the same material in less time.
Now, if the district was smart, they could help by rolling back some of their mandated assessments that take up valuable teaching time, and that's something that I'm going to encourage the district to do.
Margot Pensaval is a USC professor of clinical education and has a child of her own in an LAUSD school. She doesn't think the school year length is really a problem at LAUSD. She says the district needs to rethink its priorities and think of ways to engage students so time is used more effectively.
And the main priority is quality teaching. Whether it happens five less days a year, I don't think that's going to matter as much as, you know, carrying through some of the new ideas about pink-slipping people who aren't doing the job, having clear criteria about what it looks like to do the job, and putting kids as our first priority.
Even with the deal, the district still has a $500 million deficit. UTLA says it will continue to lobby Sacramento for more education dollars to prevent any further furloughs or layoffs. Paula Kosofsky, Annenberg Radio News.
Seven California hospitals are facing almost $500,000 in fines for violations that endangered patients. The state's Department of Public Health announced penalties for the seven hospitals today. The hospitals are in Riverside, Orange, San Bernardino, San Diego, San Francisco, and Yolo counties. The hospitals have 10 days to appeal or submit correction plans to avoid fines. The Compton Unified School District is taking a step against obesity. The district was inspired by TV star Dr. Ian Smith and his nationwide weight loss program. Today it launched its own version of the 50 million pound challenge. Skylar Kenny has the story.
They call it the 50 million pound challenge. At the Compton Unified School District, it's a fun and competitive way to help fight obesity among teachers, faculty, and staff. The 12-week weight loss competition begins today at the district boardroom. There, 275 district employees will split into 55 teams and head for the scales.
Today's the first weigh-in, so for the next 12 weeks, they have to weigh in once a week. It's a mandatory weigh-in. They have to exercise at least 3 days a week, and they have to commit to eating healthier.
That was Tammy Foy, the district's grant manager and executive director of the Compton Education Foundation. She says the competition means much more than just losing weight.
It's not dieting. It's about changing the lifestyle and eating raw foods and eating healthier things and exercising and just, you know, feeling better about ourselves, and productivity goes up and attitudes change. And I've seen it.
These lifestyle changes are important to the Compton Unified School District, where obesity and fast food diets are a growing problem.
We have a large portion of our staff that are overweight. I would say a third of our staff are probably obese, not just overweight, but obese. On Compton Boulevard alone, you will see 10 fast food places on one block. It's really an issue that we're trying to really deal with.
Foy says the issue must be dealt with promptly because health premiums for district employees are on the rise. She attributes the rise to many of the chronic health issues related to obesity.
If we really don't help people learn how to eat better and healthier and exercise, and we probably would not be offered health care through one of our largest providers.
Dickerson Employee Benefits, the district's employee benefits firm, is sponsoring the program with cash prizes for the teams who lose the most weight. The district held the same competition last October, and Foy says employees lost a total of 2,500 pounds.
Some of our teams last time checked each other's lunch every day. What are you eating? You know, oh, no, you're not eating that. When we have the weekly weigh-ins, it's an opportunity for everyone to kind of not just cheer their team on, but cheer their friends on, you know. And people said this was the best thing that they've seen happen to Compton in a long time.
The final weigh-in will take place on June 30th. Skylar Kenny, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight, there will be clear skies with lows in the lower 50s. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy and foggy with highs in the mid-60s to lower 70s. Tomorrow night, expect more clouds and fog. Thursday, there will be highs in the low to mid-60s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, hear more about what one expert thinks about the cutthroat nature of politics. One group of Angelenos have taken to the streets to give out free bread. Jason Schwartz takes a look at the Bicycle Bread Company.
Twice a week, people crowd onto the corner of 29th and Ellendale. The smell of fresh bread draws them in, and they watch on as loaf after loaf is sliced and then handed out for all to try.
Do you ladies want to try a free slice of bread?
They call themselves the Bicycle Bread Company. One day, they'd like to work out of their own bakery, but today, they stand on a street corner, giving out freshly baked bread, hoping that once people are all done chewing, they will start talking.
We felt like the best way to get it into people's mouths is to give it to them for free.
Florida native Ben Gordon decided to follow in the footsteps of his older brother Stephen by attending USC and helping him chase down his dream of opening a friendly neighborhood bakery.
He felt like that's something that was really lacking, and I love the vision, so I moved out here to be a part of that.
Separately, they each learned how to bake. Then, about a year and a half ago, they took to the streets, handing out slices and taking notes on the feedback they received. These days, using a hand-me-down oven from the Olive Garden and a group of friends who have joined to help make their dream a reality, they bake over 150 loaves of bread a week out of their own kitchen, from orange cranberry to garlic to cinnamon raisin, and oh, how fast it goes.
I like to eat it with butter. I like to eat it with other things like a sandwich. I like to eat it by itself.
There were a whole bunch of people standing here having a good time and just said, hey, would you like to try a piece of bread?
They stand outside with a fold-up table and a plastic gray cart. Their setup may be small, but they attract large crowds. At least half a dozen people surround them at any given time. And by the end of the day, barely two loaves remain. They greet each customer with a smile and introduce themselves, remembering the names of each and every person that comes by.
What's your name?
Lily.
Lily. Hi, Lily. I'm Stephanie.
But handing out your product hardly sounds like a financially sensible way to conduct a business. They get donations from some of their most loyal supporters and sell full loaves of bread for $4. But the project is funded mostly out of their own pockets, an investment they hope will pan out in the very near future. They have also started looking for new places to bake, trying to find a bigger kitchen to support larger quantities of bread.
So we're going like everywhere, saying, hey, can we use your kitchen from the really early morning hours? And so no one said yes yet, but we're still working at it.
The Bicycle Bread Company believes it will only be a matter of time before they have a store that they and the neighborhood will call home. Jason Schwartz, Annenberg Radio News.
When Haiti was rocked by a deadly earthquake, the whole world took notice. Unfortunately, short attention spans and other seismic activity have shifted attention away from Haiti. Despite billions in aid, many Haitians still lack basic essentials like food and shelter. Ariel Pratt spoke to one LA activist who's taking Haitian relief into her own hands.
Winnie Jackson has dedicated more than 20 years to children's rights across the country. But the horrible conditions she's seen in America couldn't prepare her for the devastation of one Haiti orphanage.
When I found out the children were sleeping in wet dirt under a makeshift tent and that there was no food, no clean water, it was like a catalyst that just ignited me.
Jackson saw a Fox documentary that was her call to action. The film followed the journey of American Luger Hyacinthe, who went to Haiti after the earthquake to help his family. In the aftermath of the 7.0 earthquake, there was an outpouring of celebrities and media covering the quake and raising money for relief. When Hyacinthe reached his family in Petite Guave, he couldn't believe his eyes.
You know, I don't see any hope for them. You know, no human being, not even an animal, should be living in this kind of condition.
Petite Guave is one of four provinces in Haiti and is just 42 miles away from the capital of Port-au-Prince.
There was not even any organization who arrived there. A lot of excuses was the road was bad, but when I got there, somehow I was able to drive to get to that place.
The media focused on sending relief to the capital, but provinces like Petite Guave have fallen off their radar. Hyacinthe started filming during his visit to document the poor living conditions. When Jackson saw his footage, she realized she had to help in every way possible. She spends her mornings trying to reach the World Food Program in Italy.
We need enough food to last for 6 to 8 months. Maybe by then the World Food Program will have made it. I don't know. But at this rate, I don't hold out much hope for that.
Jackson is disappointed with the food program's efforts, but she's working to raise money with the help of Los Angeles organizations, churches, and community leaders. She's teamed up with Fernando Pullum, a well-known Los Angeles educator and music teacher. He's presenting a concert on April 30th to raise resources for the orphanage in Petite Guave. Pullum and his team will personally travel to Haiti, buy the goods with the funds raised, and drive a delivery truck to the orphanage. Jackson believes this plan will be the only way to ensure the resources get directly into the hands of the children who need it.
We can stand by and let kids starve when, in fact, we sent all this money supposedly to help these people. Or we can do what is right. This is the right thing to do.
Ariel Pratt, Annenberg Radio News.
The recent escalation of outrage in the healthcare debate is just one example of the growing culture of viciousness in our political landscape. To discuss the politics of nastiness, I spoke earlier today with Reed Galen, a campaign strategist who has recently worked on the campaigns of John McCain, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and George W. Bush. What are we looking at right now in the national discourse on the spectrum of nastiness?
If you go back to the 2008 campaign, you know, where President Obama, obviously, I think it was a transformational election. And I think the 3 months between the time he won and the time he was inaugurated were really a time, I think, of, you know, as close to what bipartisanship was going to look like as we were going to get. But once he got into office and sort of started articulating more clearly what it is he wanted to do, you quickly saw Republicans revert back to what they do. And Democrats, very emboldened, going to have 60 seats in the Senate, going to have a majority in the House. And you see last summer that really culminating with the, you know, the Tea Party activists in the town hall. And so I think that sort of set the tone for where we are now. And the vitriol is as bad as it's been. And I think it's, you know, it's an election year, too. So everything is elevated.
In your experience in politics, you've worked on the campaigns of John McCain and George Bush. Are things really that much more extreme now than they have been in the past?
I'm not sure if it's any more extreme than it's ever been. The problem is that the volume button's never off. You know, I mean, it's always blaring out of the radio all the time. It's just coming at you 24/7. You got your iPhone, you got whatever. You can get anything you want any time of the day or night. The news never stops, never stops. There was a time probably when you could watch the evening news and sort of take away, okay, the news is over, and now I'm going to sort of marinate on that for a little while. What do I really think? What, you know, you're going to read a newspaper. Now, the evening news ends, you flip to Fox News, and it just keeps going. And you turn the TV off, and you're on your laptop, or you're on your home computer. I mean, it just never stops. And so I think that, is it any worse than it's ever been? I don't know, but it's certainly everywhere all the time, and I think that makes a big difference.
That was Reed Galen, Managing Director of Campaign Strategy Firm Mercury Public Affairs. Now we check in with Lacey Ehrlich to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News tonight.
Thanks, Megan. It's opening day for the Dodgers, but their main focus isn't on the game. It's on the fans. There's been a crackdown on drinking around the stadium. We'll tell you more about fans' reaction. Tune in to ATVN tonight at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision for this story and more.
That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Charisse Delgadillo. Karen Marcus is our producer. Timothy Beckworth and Richie Duchon are the executive producers. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Megan McCarty. Have a great day.